Bama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones here with Tommy Dees this week. Tommy is back in the office. He either spent the last week meeting with other sports editors from around the country or at a secret Illuminati meeting. I don't think he's going to tell you which one it was, though.
I'm not going to tell you which one, but I had some really good Thai food in Nashville, whichever one it was.
Yeah.
And a few other things, adventures.
Didn't go get any hot chicken while you were in Nashville?
Yeah, I didn't. And when I lived in Nashville, my first job was with the now-defunct Nashville Banner. I was the prep writer, and hot chicken wasn't a thing there at that time. If it had been invented, nobody knew it that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
The unique Nashville food was something called egg bread, which is kind of like looked like a pancake, and it was kind of like cornbread, except it was egg-based. I don't know, but like everywhere you went, instead of cornbread, they had egg bread. So I guess you could take egg bread and wrap it around some hot chicken and have the most Nashville thing ever.
Yeah. Well, that was then and this is now.
Well, another highlight of my trip, and I'm sure everybody is really wanting to hear all this, but the Tennessee and the Banner shared a building and a printing press, and they're moving, the Tennessean is moving out of that building August 1st or by August 1st, and then they're tearing it down and building another hotel or whatever it is in downtown Nashville. And so I got I've been through the building once a few months ago, maybe a year ago, and I got to do another tour with some former Banner and Tennessean employees, kind of an alumni meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to steal the mat out front at what was the old front door.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a plan and everything, and the guy Dave Ammenhauser, the sports editor of the Tennessean, was like, you can't do that, or at least don't do that when I'm here, come back at midnight. And I'm like, I'm not going to be doing this at midnight. That's the way to get caught. Just act like you know what you're doing. But I thought it was something you could roll up, that it was more like a canvas type thing. It was actually this big thick rubber mat, and it just had been there 100 years. It probably needed to be hosed down and was toxic, but you couldn't bend it. I mean, it was just, you couldn't have rolled it up and carried it, and we couldn't have gotten it in a trunk. And that was the disappointment of the whole thing. But we had a nice tour, ran into a couple of people that were still working in the building from back when I was. And it was kind of a neat memory lane type thing.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking today, now that we've gone over Tommy's secret Illuminati meeting in Nashville. We're going to talk today about Alabama's wide receivers for this upcoming season in 2018. We're going to be doing a different podcast on, I think, 10 different position groups for
Alabama. Not today. Not all at once.
Not all at once. No, we just talk ourselves into the ground if we try to do that. But we are starting with wide receivers today, and we'll be rolling these out probably one or two a week in between now and about the start of fall camp. I think 10 will carry us through the start of fall camp, assuming that there's some other news that happens in between now and then, some other podcasts that we record. It's not just all going to be position previews in between now and then, but this is the start of those.
Yeah, and we probably need to throw in one about the coaching staff changes at some point. We kind of at least have a better feel for their demeanors and how they worked out in the spring now that they've been on campus for a little while. And a few of them at least, were kind of mystery men that we know maybe a little more about now.
Yeah. This is how it works when Tommy comes back to the office. He just throws work at me. So
get started on that one.
Yeah.
That'll be Ben going solo for an hour and a half on the new coaching staff.
Yeah. In any event, Alabama's wide receivers this year actually lose quite a bit. You wouldn't necessarily think
of it. Lost a whole lot, and his name was Calvin Ridley.
Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily think of it because it's probably one of the stronger position groups on the team overall, and certainly the offense has pretty high expectations coming back. I think the coaching staff really likes the players that they have there, but there are still several guys who were walking out the door, not just Calvin Ridley, although he's certainly and far and away the biggest loss of that position group, maybe the biggest loss on the offense from last season.
I would say that's probably easily arguable that he was.
Yeah.
Yes. NFL certainly thought so.
But they're also losing Cam Sims, who was more or less a starter. You know, he rotated as much as anybody else other than Calvin Ridley and was probably the best blocking wide receiver on the team.
Yeah, and he wasn't like, you know, didn't have huge numbers as a receiver, but he seemed to move the chains a lot, showed up on a lot of times when it was, you know, third and seven and you needed eight, you know, he'd get eight, that kind of guy, you know. Seemed like his catches were often very timely.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a guy who was going to, you know, break the field open and have a lot of 80-yard receptions and swing passes that turned into 40-yard receptions, but dependable hands, willing to go across the middle, physical guy all the way around. I think he'll be missed more than people probably realize. Big target, too.
Yeah. I think he's actually doing pretty well with the Redskins in their rookie minicamp now.
Would not be surprised if he made an NFL team. He's also a guy that you can think would be able to play special teams
and really play coverage
out because he likes the physical part of the game, and you can't play special teams if you're not built for that, and he definitely is built for that, and he's got an NFL kind of body for that.
Yeah, I think NFL teams, if you're going to keep your fourth or fifth wide receiver on the roster, you know, you need that guy to play special teams, and you would like for that guy to not be 5'10", 170.
Right. Unless he's a returner, yeah.
Yeah, and Cam Sims is not 5'10", 170. He's 6'4", 215.
Yeah, he's got NFL size, and he's, like I said, there's a lot of guys out there that have that size or a number of them that aren't as physical as he is, and I think NFL teams will like that because he just is not a guy that's going to back down from a physical challenge.
Yeah, and then the other loss that the wide receivers had, also another guy who played kind of starter minutes or starter snaps, was Robert Foster, fifth-year senior. Probably didn't make quite as many plays as what some people had expected during his career, given his recruiting rankings and everything, but still, when he got the ball in his hands, was a threat to score, had a couple of big plays
from anywhere on the
season.
Field. Yeah.
Yeah.
When he made up his mind to catch a pass, he usually did something with it. He just didn't make up his mind to catch a pass very often.
Yeah. In any event, those are the three wide receivers that Alabama is losing from last year, at least the three scholarship wide receivers. I don't believe there's any more that are gone. But those,
not of consequence, at least.
That's a good way to
think
put
of
it.
Any. Nobody who shows up on the stat sheet anyway.
Yeah. So you weren't sitting here in the room, but sometime last August, maybe like the second or third podcast we had recorded, Aaron Suttles and I sat down and talked about who Alabama's second leading receiver was going to be on the season. And that wasn't just limited to wide receivers, because we thought there was a good chance that with Brian Daboll coming in, it might be a tight end. We thought that with a guy like Damian Harris, he might have a chance to be the number two receiver. As it turns out, I think that Bo Scarborough actually caught the second most passes for Alabama last year. He had 17 catches, although the second most yards last year was Jerry Jeudy, which I believe was Aaron's pick for the number two receiver last year. And then Henry Ruggs had the second, or did he have, he had the most touchdown receptions last year.
All he did was catch touchdowns.
Yeah, he had six touchdown catches, and Calvin Ridley had five.
And I think he had like six catches or something like that.
Yeah, he started his career with like five catches for five touchdowns or something absurd. Devontae Smith, obviously, is the other guy coming back from that position group. You would probably expect that whatever combination, wherever they line them up on the field, that Jeudy, Ruggs, and Smith would be the three primary guys. They'd be the three guys that you would probably see out there first. Although there are other guys, Cam Sims, who's a veteran, he's coming back. I think this is his final year of eligibility. Tyrell Shavers is the guy who was injured during spring, I believe, redshirted last year, but I think the coaching staff likes him. Anyone else that we should talk about here in this group?
I think those are the ones, and you have to look, you know.
Xavien Marks has been a good special teams player for them, lines up in the slot a little bit.
Right. I could see him contributing, and you have to see if there's a freshman coming in who might deal some thunder.
Jalen Waddle
would
be one of them, yeah. Xavier Williams, I think, is another true freshman. Jadarius Townsend was a guy who redshirted last year. So those are the names to be watching for this year. But probably the three to start with in fall camp until guys separate themselves would be Jeudy, Ruggs, and Smith.
Yeah, and before we go further, I would say I wouldn't be shocked if a freshman stepped into that role, because mm-hmm. there's not a – for the last several years you've had – you knew that Amari Cooper was going to be the number one target, and you knew Jones was going to be the number one target. And that's one of those things where that means that of these returning guys, that means there's room for someone else to maybe step in and become the number one target as a freshman.
Now, of those three guys, the sophomores who are coming back, who all played such a big part in the offense last year, do you have a guy that is a favorite of yours, or a guy that you think might be the most likely candidate to be the primary guy this season? If there is even a primary guy this season, we might be entering an era for Alabama when there's not one wide receiver who goes out there and has 65 catches on the season by himself.
Yeah, that, interestingly, they're all kind of listed in that 6 foot to 6'1", 173 to 187 range, with Judy being the biggest of the guys at 6'1", 187. But Ruggs just does not look as big as the other two to me. And quite frankly, he's my favorite guy to watch among this group. He's got that slipperiness that you like a slot guy to have. He seems to find holes, and he seems to make timely catches. I mean, when you keep catching touchdown passes, that says something. And as near as I can recall, I don't remember him dropping any passes. If he did,
he did have some problems with his hands on special teams when they put him back there as a returner, though.
That's a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think of him as being very sure-handed now. If he can get to it, I think he'll catch it. And I think that breeds confidence in a quarterback, which is why people look for him in the red zone.
Yeah.
Usually your red zone targets are really big guys. You know, you want those jump ball kind of guys. And he's just the opposite. But he sure seems to find the ball in the, you know, that area of the field. And I think he can be a guy who really makes it harder for you to double the outside guys, because you're going to have to pay attention to him. You can't just kind of let him go on a slowish safety, because he'll eat him alive.
Yeah, this is the thing. I don't know if it's really easy to pick any one of these three guys as being the standout among them, because all three of them at most other schools in the SEC would be the number one wide receiver. I think it's probably to Alabama's advantage that they're all a similar size, and that given enough time with them, you can probably cross-train them and have all three guys line up at the three different wide receiver positions, move them around, figure out who's going to get the best matchup. If one guy does kind of stand out, then you can figure out where you're going to put him and which defender you want to cover him to give him the best opportunity. That's something that I would look for to see if they can do this fall.
Yeah, and I think, owing to the last play of last season, a lot of people will say, watch out for Devontae Smith.
You said Henry Ruggs always tends to catch the ball the right place at the right time, and Devontae Smith had two freaking game winners last season. So, Mississippi State being the other one.
Right. And Judy might be the most talented of the bunch physically. Yep. He's the guy certainly from the spring of his freshman year, had the huge game at the spring game and made everybody say, wow, watch that guy. I think he's the guy that most people kind of looked at and said, that's the next Amari, Calvin, Judy kind of succession. And he could be.
I think part of that expectation of him was because he was also the guy coming in from Florida, where Amari had come from.
Same build as the other two, same.
Yeah, where Calvin had come from.
If you line those three up next to each other, you would see a lot of similarity. They're the same type physical build, and they come from the same area of the country, so I can see that. But he also had a huge spring game where both quarterbacks threw for like 400 yards in that game, and he seemed to be the guy that was all over the place. So, I do think everything comes back to quarterback, so let's have another quarterback podcast. But Tua seems to want to spread the ball around to a lot more people, whereas Jalen tends to, I think, go to the one he's most secure with. And when there's a Calvin Ridley there, or previous to him, not with Jalen, but with there's an Amari Cooper there, you know, people criticized. I don't understand why. Boy, they threw it to Amari too much. You cannot throw it to a guy like that too much. It's like saying, boy, you got Julio Jones out there. Don't throw it to him more than four times a game, because, you know, people know it's coming. Well, can you stop it? That's the question there. So I don't know that there's certainly not a guy that's proven in that role right now, which means you may see a little bit more of a democracy among the pass catchers.
Yeah. It was also interesting during spring that wide receiver was probably somewhat of a group of concern for the coaches after a couple of injuries there. You know, they started out in the spring feeling like they were probably in a pretty good place there, and were able to put Devontae Smith at defensive back a little bit, not expecting to move him there full time, but just to help out and have another body there in the two deep, because they didn't have enough scholarship players in the two deep in the secondary. But as spring went on and there were a few more injuries, they had to move him back to wide receiver, and suddenly wide receiver was a position that looked kind of thin. Obviously, that's before the freshmen get here. That's before anything else happens. But I think that beyond those three guys, they're not really sure where the production would come from. If they were to have some injuries like that during the season, it might be an issue, because you really need, at a minimum, you know, three wide receivers to be able to go out there, and you don't want to play three wide receivers the whole game. You want to be able to rotate guys like they did last season.
Yeah, and more than probably in any other position, you want guys coming in and out because they're running sprints. You know,
yeah.
Even if the ball's not coming your way on a running play, your assignment may be to run a 40, 50-yard sprint and sell that you're going deep, play action, whatever. So, you know, to keep people honest, and that can wear you out, you know. And I guess you see the teams that run a lot of up-tempo, and Alabama does that sometime, use a lot more receivers because they're wearing defensive backs out because they don't change out in every play. So I would think you want 5 to 6 guys that you're into the rotation with, maybe 3 of those taking 60-70% of those snaps, but the other guys are going to be on the field at times.
Yeah, and that's probably where you'll see the opportunity, at least for a guy like Jalen Waddle or Xavier Williams, the two freshmen in this class, to be able to come in and play. Slade Bolden.
And Xavier Marks, who I think at the slot can really be a feast. He's a little smaller,
yeah.
Smaller guy, more what you think of as a slot type guy, but very quick and fast. And I could see a lot of quick slants his way. You know,
if Lane Kiffin was still here, he would get at least 2 jet sweeps a game.
He would get 17 jet sweeps a game. let's just change the subject. And let's bring Lane back, okay? That's what every podcast, when I talk, we need to bring up Lane Kiffin. So you brought him up this time, to your credit. But somebody would touch, there would be 24 jet sweeps a game, and he would get 17 of them.
Going back to wide receivers, however, Lane Kiffin notwithstanding, this is also, I know.
Lane's got some good wide receivers down there.
Okay, Tommy. Well, there's a new position coach for this group, although Mike Loxley, who was the wide receivers coach last year, is still on staff. Josh Gattis comes to Alabama from Penn State, where he'd spent the last few years with James Franklin. Before that, was at Vanderbilt, also with James Franklin. Seems like he's done a good job there. Also, if you follow any of the coaches on Twitter, he's probably one of the more active coaches out there tweeting. Certainly a younger guy. Be interesting to see what he brings. He's also been, if you followed him on Twitter, he's tweeted some rather illuminating stuff. He'll tweet some film from practice talking about what he likes to see in guys or what he's teaching them and showing them. He's an interesting guy.
That's neato. I like that.
Yeah.
Lane tended to tweet different things.
Come on, Tommy.
But hey, you opened the door. But no, I am interested to see what he can do. I think Mike Loxley's probably a little underrated as a receivers coach. I think a lot of people kind of eyed him as a somewhere down the road, whether at Alabama or elsewhere, offensive coordinator again in his career. But I think I liked what I saw with what he did with the receivers, and developmentally, I think Alabama's been very good with receivers. The NFL certainly thinks so. And this guy comes in with pretty good credentials. I think he was thought of as one of the bright young stars in the Big Ten coaching ranks, and a pretty good get. And I'll be interesting. I don't know what area he recruited for Penn State, but I would wonder if he might bring some possibilities of bringing in some Ohio, Pennsylvania type guys on the recruiting end too.
Maybe. Yeah, I'd be curious about that as well.
And, you know, Alabama's not going to target 14 guys a year in that area, but they may find 3 that they like, and he might be the guy that would end up being the go-to guy there. So.
Yeah. The other thing that we probably have to talk about as we're talking about receivers in the passing game is how the quarterback will play into that. Obviously don't know who the quarterback will be at this point, but we did see in the final game of the season.
Oh, come on. We can tell them now. We've been holding out on
you guys. Yeah. No, we don't.
It'll either be Jalen or Tua. I'm letting the cat out of the bag.
Yeah. Tommy got that from a secret Illuminati meeting in Nashville last week.
It was revealed to me.
Yeah. In any event, I would say that we did see probably 2 different offensive approaches towards the end of last season when Jalen was in the game against Georgia and then against Clemson as well versus when Tua was in the game. Do you think that plays into that the wide receivers that they have on this team plays into the quarterback decision at all, or how one group will affect the other here?
Do they play into the decision, as in do they get a vote? No. Nick Saban will decide that all by himself.
No, that's not really what I was asking.
I don't know that looking at the wide receiver core, I guess being less experienced and without a go-to guy, would make Nick Saban make either one a better choice than the other. I think it's a big picture thing, and how he likes – the offense with each guy. It still comes down to, with Nick Saban, is who's not going to turn it over, you know? And if he gets the feeling that Tua's still too much of a gunslinger for him, he's going to go with the other guy who threw two interceptions, I think, all year.
Do you think that's what it'll come down to?
That's,
without getting this to be a quarterback podcast, but for the last month, several months, what we've heard is the guy who wins the team, which isn't always the guy who
turns it over, at least. At first, do no harm has always been his mantra at quarterback. You know, I still go back to A.J. McCarron's first touchdown pass at Alabama, which is, I think, against Chattanooga or somebody like that, that week before Auburn kind of game. And I think it was his first, I'm pretty sure it was, and he threw a touchdown into triple coverage. And before he got within 5 yards of the sideline, he was getting, I think he thought he was going to get, you know, Nick a hug and a high five, and that was not what Nick greeted him with. It was, you know, he literally got cursed out for his first touchdown pass in college because you don't throw into triple coverage. And the worst thing that can happen in Nick Saban's mind is if you do that against Chattanooga and it works, so you think you can do that.
And, against LSU or anybody else,
you know, that now you think it's a good thing. And I still think Nick Saban's offense is built on every series that ends with a kick is a good series, and he can play doing it. When you got a defense like Alabama has, you're going to get in a shootout or two a year, and you certainly need ammunition to do that, but you can also shorten the game with your running game and everything. You know, I don't know which way he's going to go with the quarterback thing. I don't think it's a given that it's Tua based on a half of football, which I've watched relatively recently, and people forget the interception that he threw, which was a horrible interception.
People threw an interception on a running play.
Yeah, and people forget or maybe overlook. You know, he had some happy feet in the third quarter where he pulled the ball down way too early, much like people accused Jalen of. Now, he settled in, and he made the magical play that mattered, and he did some other good things. But, you know, one of his touchdown passes was caught by the guy who he wasn't throwing to, if I recall correctly. You know, you had somebody step in front of it, and you don't know how that would turn out. I think you probably would end up with an interference call, or should have, if it had gone to the back of the end zone. But it's not like, you know, right now you're choosing between Jalen Hurts and Dan Marino or Joe Montana. You're seeing a guy who still was a freshman at the end of last year and still made some freshman mistakes. You can project how good he's going to be, and he did a lot of things well, but Nick Saban may or may not think he's ready to be that guy. I do think, as it relates to the receivers, that Tua is the guy who will be more democratic with the ball. He will be making reads and throwing to the first open read. I think Jalen is still more in a half field sometimes, you know, roll him out, short option, long option, then pull it down and run, or a 1-2 check and then do, because, you know, there's a difference between passer and quarterback. A quarterback has to be a leader, and a quarterback has to move the chains, and Jalen is exceptional at moving chains. He has made some plays that were, you know, look at the LSU game with the scramble for that touchdown. Look at the Clemson game with the scramble for that touchdown, the one they lost when he brought him back in the fourth quarter. He's got a good pedigree, and he's done a lot of good things. Everybody likes to focus on what somebody doesn't have and doesn't do. But if Alabama had lost to Georgia in the championship game, and it had lost because Tua made two wrong turns, turning a 6-yard sack into a 13-yard sack, and knowing you don't have a kicking game now at second and forever, so you have to go for the end zone. If he doesn't throw that as a touchdown pass, if they go bang, 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 three and out there and lose, we're probably not talking about him in the same way we would have earlier. Been like, what a stupid mistake, you know, he made turning that into a long sack.
Yeah.
So as it relates to the receivers, I think one or two receivers might benefit more if Jalen's the guy, whoever those one or two are, that he has the best chemistry with, the best feel for, the ones he'll go to and want to go to, whereas Tua's more likely to spread the ball around, I think. But another thing you can maybe read into that is a lot of Tua's experience on the practice field was with the backups, and that's who he was throwing to, you know, guys who weren't necessarily first team all the time, were the guys he had the best chemistry with.
Yeah. The good news,
he probably hadn't thrown to Ridley as much.
Probably not, yeah. The good news for Alabama's offense, of course, is that for as good as the passing game has the potential to be, no matter how you decide to construct it, there's also a really good offensive line and a couple of really good running backs back there. It's not as though it's going to be quarterback, wide receiver, or bust for this group, although I think people really are excited about the potential of the passing game this season.
Yeah, it's you know, I think I still will always go back to, you know, the best you ever have it as a, say, coach at the University of Alabama and probably anywhere else is if they're griping about how you're winning. You know, because they're going to gripe anyway. But, you know, they want, everybody wants to throw for 500 yards, have a couple of 100-yard running backs every game, and hold the other team to less than zero. And that just doesn't happen every time, you know. And you may have a guy who passes well, and you may have a guy who runs well, but, you know, whatever works best for this offense is what they'll, I think, gear it around. You know, they'll look at – they'll narrow it down to who the playmakers are, and they will design the offense around those.
Yeah, it seems like a good place to leave this first podcast. So that's one down and 9 or 10 to go.
Sounds good to me.
We break these up. All right, thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back later with outside linebackers, this next one.